Here on Outwork with the Ready, we use Slack to collaborate on nearly every part of making the show.
It's where we share research, talk about listener questions, and plan future episodes. That's because Slack is the AI-powered platform where work happens. It's a place for teams of all sizes to come together so they can be more productive, organized, and creative.
Plus, it adapts to our workflow, not the other way around, offering everything from messaging to audio clips. And for the times we really need to sync up on the finer points of something, Sam and I can jump right into a huddle for FaceTime. No scheduling required.
Now, if only recording our show was that easy.
Right? So whatever you're trying to grow, do it faster and easier with Slack.
Learn how at slack.com.
It's almost like someone in the kitchen being like, this soup doesn't taste good. What does it need? I don't know. And it's like, are you aware of salt, fat, acid, heat? And they're like, what? And you're like, okay, well.
That bothers you so much more than it bothers me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Brave New Work, a podcast about reinventing our organizations and the search for a more adaptive and human way of working. I'm Aaron Dignan, and I'm joined by my sweatered co-host, Rodney Evans.
Hello, everyone.
On today's episode, we're going to explore some questions that we've been sitting with. Questions like, can anyone thrive in self-management? Can everyone weigh in equally in governance? But before we get into those meaty questions, let's do a fairly meaty check-in round.
It is meaty, and it feels somewhat related, maybe. So we'll start this episode, like all of our episodes, with a check-in round that we both answer. And our question for today is, how well would you say you are performing at the moment?
So my first counter to this is, in what role, right? My many roles.
On average and aggregate.
Yeah, on balance. Here's how I feel. I feel like in the derby, when the car is kind of dirty and has been like driven for a while, but it's loose as a result, like it's, you know, it's probably not achieving peak performance and it's probably in need of care, but it's also just like really sunken in to the track and to the shocks and everything. So I feel like that's how I'm performing at the moment. There are places where definitely it's coming apart at the seams, but also there's a looseness to the way it's feeling right now. And in the places where I am contributing, I feel good about it. And in the places where I'm kind of dropping the ball, I'm like, yeah, but I got to just make this turn and I'll get around to the next corner. So I would say, I don't know, B plus, but with style.
With style.
What about you?
Yeah, mixed. Here's the thing. I can always like muscle out performance in any situation because I have a real like robotic gear that I can shift into. Not particularly enjoying a lot of things right now. And so that is like on my mind because to me, as a performer and agent in the world, I just like, I know when I'm muscling through it. And usually the way that I can tell is because I feel like impatient. And I just have had a lot of moments lately where I'm like impatient or bored or just like, I have a feeling of like, let's just get through this, which is not how I like to feel in work. And so I would say that's how I'm performing is like, it's good on paper. It doesn't feel great.
Is it, I'm curious now, I have to extend the check-in round because I
Well, we
know
already
something.
Decided we have no script for this episode, so we can do, it's just like YOLO. We can
do whatever
the
we
fuck we want. Yeah.
This is like the OG, like first five episodes of the show.
Exactly.
What I'm curious about hearing you say that is how do you figure the role of enjoyment either in your like overall objective of the work that you're doing or as a relationship to performance? Like where does enjoyment figure in for you? How does that fit into the, you know, anatomy of your overall experience?
I mean, this is very much my like Enneagram 7 type. It is literally the most important thing.
It's top of the pyramid.
Like every time I go into a meeting that I don't want to go into, I'm like, how do I change my life so I never have to do this again?
Right.
Like my entire life from where I live, to who I chose to marry, to all of the major life choices, to the roles that I play and the things I say no to, number one, and I realize this is a very privileged position that I'm in, is this fun for me?
And so,
if it's not fun for me, for the most part, I just try not to do it or I find my way out of it.
Yeah. What I'm curious about hearing you say that is when you are in a self-managing system in which you do have a lot of power and enjoyment is, you know, high on the list, if not at the top of the list, do you ever feel like you're at odds with yourself? Like you're sort of, you're the architect of a lot of the conditions that you're operating under. And so does that ever feel, does it feel like you're wrestling with yourself to find enjoyment or with everything else?
That's a good question. I mean, I would ask you the same question. I think for me, I'm not really going to answer it as either of those things.
What of course, I'm usually you're Mrs. Third Way.
Yeah, I'm Mrs. Third Way. What I'm usually conscious of when I'm not enjoying something is because it's that I have chosen to do something that I feel needs to be done.
Yeah.
But I don't particularly want to do it. And as I'm doing that, I am also architecting how I will not have to do it in the future. So that is more of like an external thing. Obviously, I could not choose to engage in those things because I have that freedom and that luxury. And I feel a lot of responsibility to our company to not let things persist in a way that feel not good and just like hope somebody else does it. So usually when I'm doing something that I'm really not enjoying, it is with the greater good in mind. And mostly I don't do that. Mostly I just do stuff I like doing. Because I just think I'm better at it.
Right.
Like, I just think if I'm doing something and I'm having fun, I'm rarely bad at it.
No, that tracks for me. And I dug a little deeper on this because I do see some light connective tissue to the topic today.
Okay. But before we do that, I want to know how enjoyment plays a role, because this is also, Aaron and I have learned recently about our Enneagram types and how they interact with one another. And like one of the big things, so he's a 3 and I'm a 7. And one of the big things in conflict between 3 and 7 is that 3s are so driven and ambitious and achievement oriented and can see 7s as being too much about like fun and what's fun for them. And 7s can be resentful of 3s for being like, you're harshing my mellow. Why are you so serious about achievement all the time? So I want to ask you about fun and how much like your own enjoyment of what's happening right now plays a role in what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair question. And also now everyone listening understands our dynamics. The thing is, for me, I think as I've gotten older, I've been less willing or less able to shift my enjoyment into the future. So in the past as a 3, a lot of it was like, you just bite your teeth and you grit and you do it. And like later on, there will be relaxation, or later on, there will be travel, or later on, there will be rewards. Mm-hmm. And for right now, you're just like doing the important work. And you have this kind of whole identity wrapped up in that. But as I've gotten older, and I would say especially in my early 40s, it's been more like, maybe this is as good as it gets. And maybe you should start designing your life to be enjoyable, to be enjoyable to you now. And so I'd say that's a recent awakening in me. And I've been playing with my schedule and my roles and my attitude to try to lean more into that. But at the same time, as a 3 and as a driven person and as just Aaron, a lot of what I enjoy is being into something deep that I really like. And so like, if you really just break it down and you put me on a beach and you're just like, enjoy yourself, I'm going to end up inventing a language or making hats out of coconut shells or something, because I just am a busybody. So I don't know that they're completely separate in my head yet. And a lot of it has been more about, how do I make space and time to have deep, enjoyable focus on the few things that I'm really enjoying. And if I have the space and time to really like wallow in my projects, then I'm happy. And then I feel a lot of enjoyment. And if I'm like spread too thin peanut butter in like Zoom meetings all day, then I'm like, oh, I didn't really get to dig into my shit today. And then I'm mad or sad.
Yeah. It's like
work in progress.
We have different ideas about what's fun. But the point is, are we designing so that we get to do those things?
Right. And I feel like now is the time. Don't wait. Yeah.
No, definitely do not mortgage the present for the future. That's how people end up very sad in their retirement. They're like, I thought this was going to be awesome. And then it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. You get a few years of that you can spend if you really want to. But it's dangerous to gamble with it every year.
It is. It is. So That was our very extended, this whole episode is just one long check-in round. No, we're going to talk today about what the role of like credibility and skills and experiences in self-management and governance. And this has popped up in a few different spots lately inside our own companies, inside client organizations, on Twitter, in the world, et cetera. So let's just each give like a quick answer to what we're seeing right now that is bringing this up.
Sure. So for me, a couple things. One, I just had a conversation with a friend of mine who runs a business, and he was talking about the dynamic of like people in the business, you know, do I want them thinking about the how we work or do I want them thinking about the what we're doing if there's a finite amount of energy? And also just like given their skill level and their age and their experience and their presence in the business, what do I as a founder really want their attention on? Mm-hmm. And at first blush, you know, I hear that and I'm like, well, wait a second. I'm the Mr. Consent guy. And so my knee-jerk reaction is like, no, everyone should have a say in everything. But also there's a reality that like you don't have the same context and credibility and ideation in every space based on your history, based on your identity, based on your skills, based on your areas that you focus in, et cetera. So it is weird to think like, and to even advocate for the idea that everyone would weigh in on everything. And that's never really been our agenda on the show. And we're seeing this a little bit with Murmur too, like people coming in and trying to wrap their heads around I want to give everyone a voice in how we work together, but how do I use this in a way that focuses that in the right way? So that's my like 2 cents.
I like that. That's interesting. I think that what I've been pondering, which is a slightly different slice on this, is like, there are more and more voices, I think, that are like, self-management isn't for everyone and whatever. And we can talk about why that is if it's interesting. But what I think I am coming around to is, obviously, I believe that anyone can thrive in self-management. And I also believe that there are people who don't want to. And what I am learning right in this moment is like, there are people for whom the idea of spending time on the how of work isn't super interesting.
Right. Unappealing.
And it's unappealing. And so I'm becoming more and more curious, especially like at the ready, as we hire people who don't do this work professionally, like what is the scaffolding for those people if they don't want to fully party in like doing role work or doing comp work or doing whatever work? Like, how do we make it functional and accessible and exciting for people who are like, that feels like a drain to me? And like, just, you know, like, just give me, like, just give me the answer. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally do.
And I think that probably earlier in my career, especially when I was in situations that were more hierarchical and more command and control, like I just fundamentally believed that like, given the authority and given the agency, everyone would crave that maximally. And I'm coming around to the idea that there is a level of like, it doesn't have a lot to do with capability or competence, but it has to do with interest. And for some people, like they want the content of their job to not have a lot to do with the how of work. And there should be a place for those people in self-management. So it's like, you know, I think we have different lenses on this and the reasons that it's interesting, but they do feel very intersecting.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say, as you're talking about that, I actually see a Venn diagram forming anyway of all the reasons why this might be true. So, you know, so, and also like ways to address it, right? So certainly there's an interest component to this because like any field of study, it's more interesting to some than others, right?
Probably.
I mean, you know, I have family members that are like, yeah, I don't really care so much about that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not interesting to me. Something else is more interesting. And so at a hobbyist level, I think we have to accept that, like you just said, that that's going to be the case. And we talked about this earlier today on another pod that there's a combination of learning and unlearning also happening all the time. So some people have done a lot of work on how they show up and their agency and their identity and how safe or unsafe they feel, et cetera, family systems, all that stuff. And some people haven't and maybe don't want to, or it's not the right time, or they have done a different kind of work and they have a different way of relating to those topics. But we're not all coming in blank sheets of paper with like our natural platonic interests. We're coming in fully damaged from 10, 20, 30 years of work experience on top of natural interests.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a piece of the Venn. And then the third one is probably, I'm not even sure if this is part of those other two phenomenon, but I'm thinking about how do you separate the how from the what of whatever it is that you are interested in.
Mm.
So if you really are interested in coaching sports, if you really are interested in ballet, if you're really interested in art, there's a lot of how-ness in everything.
There
is. And if you really want to be great at that stuff, you're probably going to get into the how one way or another. And
totally.
So how does that figure into this lack of interest? Is it about maybe not being in the right role, or is it about maybe not being in the right stage, et cetera? So I'm feeling that out.
Yeah. Wait, are you watching Winning Time?
No, should I?
Yes.
Okay.
You absolutely should watch Winning Time. So this is a series on HBO about the rise of Magic Johnson and the LA Lakers.
Perfect.
And I don't give a shit about sports, and it is amazing. And the reason that I ask this question is because there is this period of time under the coach who was the pre-Pat Riley coach where basically he had been like thinking about like complex systems and emergence and simple rules and different kinds of formations for 20 years and had never had the chance to like try them. And really was like the first person, like the first coach to focus on the how around us in a completely disruptive way.
Nice.
And to be like, the way that basketball teams play and the way that they hold roles is slow and it's inefficient and it's ineffective. And there's
Love
a way
it.
To do this like dynamically that will completely change the game. And he was correct.
Yeah.
And it's, and what's really interesting about it and about the show is like, you also watch the exact same thing that you and I experience all the time of both players being like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I'm a point guard.
Leave me alone. And management and other coaches and commentators being like, what's this guy doing? Like, we've been playing basketball for a long time. I think we're good.
Yeah.
We have these athletes. They know what they're doing. Let them play their positions and just get better at in their expertise.
And not for nothing, but what you just described is basically plot point for plot point Moneyball, which
was
the same thing in baseball, right? So there is definitely a pattern, I think, of reinvention where you are going into the how in order to reinvent, because that's where the how, that's like where reinvention comes from, essentially, is breaking these traditions. So I am interested in that, especially as it relates to this, because it then begs the question of like, well, who naturally wants to reinvent and who naturally wants to leave things the way they are, et cetera?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I'm curious about that. Like, I am curious if there are people who in their bones have a more iconoclastic streak or a more curious streak or a more, I don't know, just like a more irreverent streak that's like... Or even just a more optimization-oriented streak that's like, there must be a better way of doing this. And
let's
find it. And I don't know. I don't know if that's true, like, psychologically.
I think it is. And I think it's dangerous, although I love to do this, it's dangerous to paint one trait or another as good or bad.
Totally.
Because one of the things Britt and I constantly talk about is introversion and extroversion. And Britt, the Lady Dignan, is quite introverted. And for a long time, I think the narrative socially was like, that's bad. Like, you should be more extroverted. You should get out and be more social. And then we were watching or reading, I forget which, but we were consuming some kind of media about history and anthropology. And one of the things that we heard, I think it might have been a podcast, was that it's an evolutionary trait to have that diversity of introversion, extroversion. And one reason is, or one posited reason is, if you are the kind of person to be far away from the tribe, you like want to live outside the town circle, maybe you're a little bit more of a fringe character. If something terrible befalls the group, you survive. And so essentially, like, being the outlier socially has evolutionary value. because you're the survivor essentially in situations where somebody ate a bad, you know, batch of bread or something like that in ancient times. And I always think about that in org theory, because I'm like, what are the traits that I personally am annoyed by that actually might be evolutionary in some way that I'm not seeing?
Right. Totally. And I think there is a balance, like anything. It's like having some folks in a self-managing system who are like, I am here to enable, I don't care about this working agreement so much. I am going to cede my time to someone who does deeply, cares deeply, knows deeply, worked deeply, whatever. I think that's valuable. That's a valuable part of self-management. Not everyone has to be so focused on changing the place all the time. And I think having people in roles and with the orientation of like, I'm here to make this work for someone else is not necessarily a bad thing. And I don't think that's about taking people's agency away. I think it's recognizing that there are people for whom having more clarity, having less ambiguity to navigate is like that kind of security is more important than their ability to innovate.
Absolutely. And I think it's one of the big kind of points of confusion when I get out there and start talking about permission versus constraint and consent and transparency and participation is the general attitude and response is like, whoa, that sounds like a lot of people doing a very particular thing, a very particular way forever in every context. And what I keep trying to remind everyone of is like, no, I'm talking about Legos. I'm talking about Lincoln Logs. The Lincoln Log I'm giving you is consent. Mm-hmm. You can build anything you want with that.
Yeah.
For example, I don't ever think about the roads in my neighborhood and how they get paved or unpaved or dug in or redone or what they're called or how the streets, because I don't give a shit. I have delegated that authority to an elected official. If I'm unhappy, I can vote for someone else. Mm-hmm. If I really am unhappy, I can write a letter and provide advice, but I just don't care.
Yeah.
And that's totally cool. That doesn't mean that the system wasn't built on democratic values.
Right.
It was.
Right.
It's just that I don't want to play the game, you know, that way in every, I don't want direct democracy for every choice in my life. That would waste my life.
Right. So I'm curious because I do feel like in some ways people getting their hands on Murmur is like, it's the stripping away of a lot of the rest of what we're talking about because it's like a tool that follows a workflow. What are you seeing in terms of the people who are like, this is a hammer, motherfuckers, I'm going to build a house, and the people who are like sitting out the rounds 9 out of 10 times?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so much there to unpack, and I'm not even sure I understand it all yet. One of the first things we noticed is that before we allowed you to have groups or to choose who you proposed to, people were like super stuck because everyone in the workspace got every proposal. And what a good example of what you're just talking about is like not good. So like everybody got everything. And pretty soon people were like, I don't want Cheryl to get this because she doesn't care or because she's super pedantic about this and it's going to ruin the experience for everyone. Mm. And it's like, you know, she wants to go do what she wants to do. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that taught us something right away. And obviously that was not the plan, but we had to start somewhere. Now that you can choose who to invite, it then begs the question, well, who should I invite? Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that gets into what you're talking about of like, is it all just a nested structure where everyone has to play in every circle every time, or is it something else? And then the last thing we're noticing, which I think is less about today's topic, but is just a reality and maybe connects to it in terms of time management, is people just get distracted by other shit they care about more and they do miss. They do miss a round or a whole decision because it's like they get the notification and they're thinking about something more important to them. Mm-hmm. And they're in a meeting or they're on vacation or they're thinking big thoughts that are not this. And they're just like, you know what? I'm going to let that go. Yeah. And so we've actually been thinking about creating some kind of a button or some kind of a consent in the beginning of the process where you basically say, you know what? I'm going to take a flyer on this one. Like y'all do what you want to do. I've got your back. I'm not going to play, but I'm showing you, but I'm intentionally not going to play. Like, I want to give you the agency to go, and I'm here to cheerlead.
And so, because you started this episode by talking about, like, credibility and expertise and skill, how do those things play with each other? Like, how do you help nudge the people who do have the credibility and expertise on the subject matter to not pass, and the people who are like the, you know, internet troll that wants to like comment on every thread to pass?
Well, yeah, that I think in some ways, like, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's the shadow side of the fairly people positive lens that we've been putting on this so far, which has been like people who don't want to play, who don't have the interest, who do trust, who do like, that's all great. I love all that. But what about the person who is like playing aggressively way over their skis?
Yeah.
Like, that's a whole nother thing. And so,
which you don't want to design for, it because that's going to be an outlier, but it's a very noisy outlier.
Yeah.
We all know that person in the Reddit thread.
Yeah. And we were talking about self-awareness earlier today, and I do think there's a huge question mark in my head, and I don't know that we have all the right agreements and norms around this figured out yet, but there's a huge question mark in my head about, like, when I weigh in with my consent on something, how and when am I checking in with who am I weighing in? Like, what am I bringing to this decision and this perspective, and how should that meter or monitor how aggressive I am, how specific I am, how participative I am? Because quite frankly, if it's something that I know very little about, there's value in me participating, because again, like, most innovations come from accidents, and they come from onlookers, and they come from edge cases. But also, you don't just want to be a blowhard end to end in a process if you just have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to find that balance. I'm curious what you think. I feel a little bit amateur about how to counsel that.
Yeah. Well, I think we don't have a solution yet. And I think this is where multiplayer feedback in a reputational system is really important. And we haven't figured that out at the ready. I don't know, you know, if you feel like that's figured out at Murmur, but like, one of the things that I think over time will be helpful in a tool like Murmur or in a more analog way is like, proposers or other participants in a consent-based process being able to give feedback to other participants about, you know, like, I appreciate you pushing, or I appreciate you confronting, or I appreciate that addition, or I appreciate your understanding of this particular domain. And right now, without any parsing of that, it is all just based on the individual being like, I think I know enough about equity to fucking say. And it's like, I bet you don't. And so I think that is really, that's really something that's missing. And it's something that I notice for myself in certain interactions and in certain meetings and things like that. Like in my mind, and then often I will do this in Slack, I will like DM someone to be like, I'm really glad that you're in this conversation. And like, I really appreciate your perspective. And it's often the person who is like the counter voice for the group think. I'm often like, please, please don't ever stop doing that, or in the closing round or whatever. But like, again, anytime we have a way of working where something like that is reliant on individual action, I'm like, this feels fragile to me.
Yeah.
Like, there should be a way that it's like, you know what? Like, Alistair is like a very good Murmur proposer and reactor and questioner. There should be a thing that makes that known in Murmur. And like, or even more in live meetings, it's like, you know, Juliana is someone in our system who I just often find brings like a very like clear, she's just like a very good org designer. And she just like will bring clarity
thoughtful
to a thing where I'm like, oh shit, like, we missed that. Like, she's often the person where I'm like, we as a group missed that. And she saw it. And it's like, how do you do something so that that is known, whether that's in a DAO or whether that's in a system like ours or whether that's in a tool like Murmur? How does something that's not just like social capital or share of airtime or self-confidence, how do we get more nuanced in understanding like who has the really smart, provocative takes, who's like so clear-eyed on the process that they're like, actually, this isn't really like a policy agreement. This is really a role agreement. Like, how do we get to more of that?
Yeah. And it's funny that you say that, because again, that's a really good example of like what we want more of. And in some ways, it both the what we want less of and what we want more of, to me, map to the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yeah, totally.
So if you make a chart, for the listeners who haven't looked at this lately, if you make a chart of confidence on the y-axis and competence on the x-axis, and you just say, like, what happens as you learn something, the Dunning-Kruger effect is that in the beginning, when you learn a little bit, you think you know everything. Right. And then you realize that you know not a lot, and the confidence goes way down. And then towards the end, it goes up again, but not quite as high as it ever was in the beginning, because the true masters are like, I don't really know everything. And there's good memes about this on Twitter with little bell charts that people end up at the same conclusion that they had. So what is interesting to me about that is there are people on the right of that scale who are a little bit lower in confidence than we would like, and who we want to like nurture and encourage and like make sure those voices and those alternative takes make it in, and that maybe there is some kind of awareness about that in the system. I don't think there was exactly the right mix of psych safety that I prefer at Bridgewater, but they did have a like believability concept that was really trafficked and discussed a lot. Like, are you believable in this area? And by the same token, we want the people that are early in the Dunning-Kruger effect to like cool it a little bit. Like, you don't know everything. And I don't know everything whenever I pick up something new. And I think that having some kind of mirror for that would be really interesting.
Yeah. I don't know what that mirror is, but I'm also interested in that.
Yeah. It might just be how much you want to be right or need to be right or need to get your needs met the way you want to get them met. There's some like demandingness to overconfidence that's kind of like it's this way or the highway that I think is interesting. And sometimes we hold it too tightly maybe. And then when you get over to the right, it's like the territory of it depends and trade-offs mostly, which I think is better. So I don't know, maybe just listening to myself and hearing when I'm trying to be like really right or when I'm not saying it depends is probably a good place to start.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, as a person who rarely suffers from low self-esteem, and I don't know why that is. I think I was just born like this. to me, the way that that shows up in a self-managed system is like, I often believe my own opinion and I'm super comfortable with other people not taking that advice. So it's like, if you're going to do the work and you're going to be the person who like brings the proposal or makes the new agreement or put the time into it, and I have a different idea and you don't take that idea, but you're going to do the work, knock yourself out. And like, do I once a week like have a moment where I'm like, I told you? In my mind, I do. Of course I do, because I've seen a lot of things. And also, I don't want to do all of the things. So I think there's a thing in there of like, all of us sort of sitting in continuous learning and trying to assess, you know, where we're able to contribute and not. And there's the thing of like, part of learning is doing. And if someone else is willing to do, I am kind of willing to shut up about it. And that's how the third way works for me.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, especially in strategic and tactical contexts. I think where I struggle more to have that lightness or to have that like letting go is when it's at a more foundational level where I see a debate or a flailing going on about something that is kind of, it makes me suspect that we don't understand it. So it's almost like someone in the kitchen being like, this soup doesn't taste good. What does it need? I don't know. And it's like, are you aware of salt, fat, acid, heat? And they're like, what? And you're like, okay, well.
That bothers you so much more than it bothers me.
Yeah, it does. And I just need more therapy, I guess. But it's sort of like, I don't know how to engage in a conversation that is substantive if we both don't know about salt, fat, acid, heat, because then we have a language with which to have the discussion and play out the trade-offs. And so there's not many situations where that's especially provocative for me, but there are still a few where I'm just like, we don't have enough common ground yet to have this debate. So I don't think I want to have it. Like, I think I'll just retreat or be really demanding, one or the other.
I'm like, will you retreat?
Sometimes.
But I think
you don't know because you don't notice, because I did.
Well, yeah, fair. But I think there's a question in that of like, yes, of course, it would be great if we're starting from the same level of mastery. And can't you just be like, hey, have you tried salt?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think you definitely can. I think it's only hard to do that when you're in a situation where there's a lot of like confidence about what needs to be done or what somebody wants for their needs to be met. And yeah. It feels like we're already past that. Like we're past trying things and now we're down to just like fighting about who wants what. Or the lack of, you know, it's funny, this also connects this whole Dunning-Kruger pattern. It also connects to the lack of suggestions too. So sometimes I'm sure you've experienced this where you're in a conversation where there is a tension or a complaint or an issue, but there are no ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, well, where do we go from here in a system? And that tends to belie like, we're not curious enough. We're not building enough comfort in that area to be able to engage with measured confidence.
Well, and to me, that's very much where these two sort of things connect, where it's like, if you're someone who wants to be a sensor in the system and use your experience and your felt tensions and your emotions as a bellwether, but not someone who wants to think about what could be tried, that is where you might fall apart in a self-managing system.
right. Yeah.
If you're like, I'm an instrument to tell you what's wrong and you are not an instrument to do anything about it.
Yep.
That might not be a place that you thrive in the long term.
I think that's right. And in many ways, maybe that goes back to the original premise,
yeah.
which is like, you need enough comfort or confidence or competence or skill or whatever the fuck it is to be able to be willing to and to have some thoughts around what to try or to even know where to go find out what to try. So even if you don't have the idea, just the willingness to say like, I don't have it, but I know where to find it and I know where to go have dialogue about it and come back with something or nurture something forward. It's really for me all about momentum and movement.
Mm-hmm.
If you know how to create movement, great.
Yeah.
If you just get stuck, no bueno.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's exactly right. And the only salt I would add to that is the interest to do it.
Exactly. Yeah, full circle. So you have the capacity to do that and you care enough or have the interest to do it. And then you can play. And frankly, if you don't, I think it's perfectly acceptable. And maybe this is news for this show because we don't talk about this a lot. But like, it's perfectly acceptable if you don't have either the interest or the competence to just let it go.
Yeah.
And not be an angry sensor, but also not be directly involved in the solution and just give that agency to your colleagues, your teammates, your group, whatever, and just be like, look, I'm down to try whatever. This is not my fight. This is not my goal. This is not my zone.
Right. I had a conversation. I was in person with a team recently and we have a very new member on that team who does not do transformation work. And it's funny because like she was doing role work at the time, but even so, I was facilitating and she was like, the role that I would like to play here is as an observer. I am here to learn, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, okay, if we do a round here, are you willing to be included in that round? And she was like, yes. And we like contracted a little bit and she was like clear about where she was basically doing exactly the thing you're saying, where she was like, this doesn't feel like my fight. So like, let me be at the edge learning. That's where I want to be. And I was like, noted. And like that is self-management.
No,
it's
totally. Yeah.
Self-management with self-awareness.
Did we get to the design we have? Yeah. Did we get to the design we have through consent? Exactly. Yes. Great. I don't care how we make the gravy. It's how we got there that counts to me. And that way you can end up with a lot of different patterns in the garden and they're all good.
Patterns in the garden feels like where we got to wrap it. Also, we're over time because we've been on a long and winding road. If you loved this very random conversation that we had today, please leave us a review.
Absolutely. A quick tip of the hat to Taylor Marvin for making us sound good in the Brave New Work garden. Brave New Work is produced by The Ready, where we help organizations around the world change the way they work, the way they want. You can get in touch with us by emailing podcast@theready.com. And as for you, thanks for listening. Now go change something. Or don't.
Funny. Okay, goodbye.